listening to ESPN Crick Info.
Hello and welcome to the second episode of Talking T20, ESPN Crick Info's all-new podcast that takes you into the heart of the game that's reshaping cricket. On our first episode, we talked about death bowling in T20s and why it's become such a difficult skill in the modern game. Today, on the back of a week of IPL action where chasing sides have thoroughly dominated, we turn our eyes to the much-discussed question, does the T20 game now favour the chasing side rather too heavily? I am Srinath Sripath, your host, and for the first time on the show, we have an international cricketer in our midst. Pleased to welcome Deep Dasgupta, former Indian cricketer and wicketkeeper.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Someone who's coached and been part of the think tank in the IPL franchise. A lot of pleasure to have you, Deep. And another T20 and IPL insider in our midst, somebody who's just been featured on this year's Wisden Almanac, Gaurav Sundaraman. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Good to see you. And of course, the man who's featured Gaurav on the Wisden Almanac, our global writer and T20 data cruncher, Jared Kimber, joining us all the way from London. Hi, Jared.
You've made it sound really incestuous now, haven't you, that I'm just writing about Gaurav? I mean, that is what happened. We can't lie. That is legitimately what happened, but it still sounds weird when you say it out loud. It's like, I basically wrote an article for Wisden about our podcast.
So we can just start off by asking you, Deep, what's the funkiest thing you've seen in a T20 game, be it a franchise or an international game, inside or outside, whenever you've been playing, coaching?
Right. So you got to understand that T20 is a very, very new format. So every team is kind of still learning. It's a work in progress. So that's the biggest thing. So there's nothing so-called funky anymore because it's a totally different format from a 50-over game or a 5-day game. So, like I said, I mean, most of the teams, I mean, almost everyone is kind of learning this format. So obviously, learning through trial and error. So you try out some things, it works, it's fine. If it doesn't, then you move on. Funky in the sense, I mean, Sunil Narayan opening would be an example. For example, yesterday, Gautam Gambhir didn't come in to bat. He's an opener. I mean, they were, what, 5 wickets down?
He was not even padded up.
He wasn't even padded up. So from that perspective, I think, again, I mean, it's work in progress. People are learning on the job. So, and I expect a lot of these things are happening in the next few years as well.
And why do you think Sunil Narayan coming out to bat at the top is a funky thing to do? Because the pinch hitter has been around for a while.
It is, but, you know, generally you'd say Sunil Narayan, if he doesn't open, then well, he would bat at number 9, right? So you're wasting somebody at number 9. So if he comes and opens, you're not too worried about losing that wicket either. I mean, otherwise he would have, and anyways, wasted that talent batting at number 9. So for him to come and open and just do his bit, even if he doesn't score, he gets out in the very first delivery, you're not too bothered about that. So I think things like that, you'll get to see more of that.
Jared, this has been an analyst favorite over the years. Resource utilization, 10 wickets in 20 overs. What's the most funky thing that you've seen?
Actually, the most funky thing I've seen is in the field when Northants decided not to have a wicketkeeper at one stage. I think taking a wicketkeeper away is about the funkiest thing we've seen since the reverse sweep, perhaps, in cricket. So it didn't work particularly well. But it shows how much teams like Northants, who don't have a lot of money but had a lot of success in T20, have to think about the game in a different way than, you know, bigger teams do. If you can't afford to hire, you know, Kyron Pollard or Sunil Narayan, maybe you will have to look at weird things like taking your wicketkeeper out. So, that's about as funky as I think T20 cricket has got so far, but I'm sure we'll find something weirder than that in the future.
Deep, have you ever fielded at the edge of the circle before? Kept to the edge of the circle, I should say.
No, I haven't, and I take it personally. Keepers. I mean, that's the new rule again, right? I mean, the new rule says your substitute can keep. I mean, straight away you're like taking keeping as a discipline straight down as a subsidiary discipline. Below batting and bowling. I mean, come on, what's with people and keepers?
Fourth class citizens.
Yeah.
Gaurav, what's the coolest thing or the funkiest thing you've asked your teams to do, or is it something from outside? What's the example you have?
I think a couple of examples come to my mind straight away. Once was Ricky Ponting sending Mitchell McLaren for Mumbai Indians. I think that was one of the earliest usage of pinch hitting, and it actually worked. And I remember Gambhir mentioning it after the tournament or sometime later that was a move which kind of shook them off guard. And these are things, you know, you want to surprise the opposition, and anything which surprises the opposition, they come in with a set plan, and you throw something different to them that usually works. And I think the other instance was Ashwin opening for CSK once. It was a low target, you know. It was not a high target. They didn't want a great start. They wanted to keep some wickets in hand. It was a spinning track. I think they had to chase on 130 or 120, which they just managed to do it at the Eden. It didn't work out though, but I felt that was good. That's the other side of chasing, sending in players who need not hit, but just try to keep wickets in hand because it's a low-scoring chase.
That's the thing with T20 cricket, because everything's happening so fast. So the surprise element is very, very important. And that's the reason I think it's a complete, I mean, to a great extent, a captain-driven format. As a captain, every delivery is an event there. So I think, as Jared mentioned, we'll see much more of that in coming years as well.
We'll just get back to the IPL. Yeah, Jared, go on.
Oh, yeah, no, just to go on from that, the captain-driven format, the reason Sonal Narayan started opening was partly because he'd worked on his batting a lot and started hitting a lot of sixes. But the other reason was he was walking off the ground after an innings and Aaron Finch said, hey, do you want to go out there and have a hit? It wasn't a huge plan. It was literally a captain having a bit of a hunch, and it's completely changed Sonal Narayan's career, realistically, that one moment. So, captaincy is the most over-talked about facet of cricket because it's so hard to actually work out what a captain does and what their overall impact is. But, you know, in T20 cricket, we know how important, you know, big calls like that can be.
Yeah, Narayan's in fact now smashed two of the fastest 50s in chases, and one of them just came last week. So far in the IPL, we've had sort of six games, and just one team in a truncated game is one batting first now. One thing that I think is not a myth anymore is that teams have definitely gotten better at chasing. But is it unfair to call T20 a one-dimensional game in that you win the toss, you win the game? Gaurav, what's the insider's view on that?
Yes, I don't think it's gone to such an extent that it's purely a chase, win toss, win chase, win match kind of situation. If you look at the numbers, it's slightly tilted towards the chasing team. It's been like that for last 3 years, but the numbers, the percentages are not too different. It's about 53 to 47 throughout the last 3 years on an average across leagues, even in the IPL as such. So there was an interesting discussion me and Deep had some time back about how the early part of the season, where the first 10-15 matches usually favour the chasing team, and slowly as the tournament goes, especially with respect to the IPL, but teams batting first come, maybe that could be the freshness of the wicket, or teams trying to figure out what they want to do, they've not got their combination right. So that was actually a very interesting insight from Deep in terms of how the pitches behave throughout the course of a tournament. And IPL is a 2-month tournament, unlike other leagues, where sometimes it's much shorter and you have lesser teams. So it'd be interesting to actually look at you divide the IPL into two halves and then see if there's a new trend emerging there.
Deep, is there a fair comment? Because initially, a team really doesn't know what its combination is. Let's say in this IPL specifically, there's a new auction, your entire unit is new.
True.
In addition to the tournament starting afresh, there's also that extra factor in these franchise tournaments.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you generally at the auction, you pick your first 12, 13 and suddenly you realize after a few games that combination is not working. So you then have to fall back on plan B, and maybe the plan B would be different, would be more spinners, for example. Then you go to the curator and say, listen, I don't want more grass, maybe less water, maybe I want the pitch to turn a bit. So I think second half, I personally believe, and also the fact that you're playing IPL after the Indian domestic circuit. So anyways, most of the venues are tired and the pitches are tired. So that also has a role to play in there. And second half, that would be an interesting stat there, Gaurav. I mean, second half, is the number still the same, you know, batting first and second?
Jared, I'm just going to come to you from a completely Australian point of view. I think there's sort of an urban legend that's attributed to Ian Chappell, which is that when you win the toss, you bat first 9 out of 10 times, and in the 10th time, you think about it and win the toss and bat first. That's kind of completely reversed, especially in an Australian setup. In the last few years, the equation's completely changed. Teams used to bat first in T20s, and in the BBL in the last two seasons, they almost always want to chase now.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you look at the data of the history of Test cricket, ODI cricket, T20 cricket, teams have certainly batted first more than they need to. Possibly because, if you choose to bowl first and you're 1 for 100 at lunch, or, you know, 3 for 300 at the end of the day's play, you feel like you're out of the game, and you can control the game a little bit more if you bat, perhaps. But realistically, there's no reason why you should always bat first. In fact, I would think if I was running a cricket team, I would work out what all the other captains are doing over and over again and do the opposite. If you know that almost every team in the league is going to try and bat second, then you can actually become the specialist team who bats first and knows how to actually play well when you bat first. So realistically, you can use the trends to your advantage. And that was always my thinking as a captain when I wasn't, you know, just ordinary junior teams. Was thinking, if our team just bowls first every game, every other team will win the toss and bat, and we'll just be able to become the specialists who bowl first. And I think you could do that in T20 now.
But Jared, I kind of understand where you're coming from. I mean, SRH is a good example. But having said that, it also boils down to the resources, right? I mean, depends on what resources you have. I mean, do you have good hitters in the end, or you've got better bowlers who can defend? And if you look at the trend, I mean, you see more and more batsmen who are better off chasing, who likes chasing. It wasn't the case maybe a decade ago. Again, a decade ago, it would be like, oh, the scoreboard pressure and, you know, scores already on the board, that would have its own pressure and blah, blah, blah. But if you see this generation, more and more batsmen are more comfortable chasing down totals, irrespective of how big they are.
But is that backed up by the numbers? Because when I look across the board, I see players who are pretty good in first innings and second innings. And if players were so much better in the second innings, we'd be seeing teams winning 70 and 80% of the time. And we're not. We're seeing teams win 54 and 51 and 53% of the time. So if teams were so much better chasing, I think the numbers would back that up a little bit more. I think a lot of this is to do with perception. And I think the narrative has taken hold, and you only need to go on Twitter during an IPL game, and people are talking about changing the rules and the playing conditions of T20 cricket. I'm not sure we're anywhere near thinking about doing anything like that now. Looking at the numbers in front of me, it seems that, you know, year on year, it's pretty similar. It's pretty close to 50-50. There is obviously occasionally years that don't go that way. So I don't know. If batsmen were so much better at chasing as a whole, then they'd be winning 60, 70, 80% of games, not 53%
of games. True. Now, that's where I meant it depends on your resources as well. If you look at India in the last 7, 8 years, and I'm speaking from an Indian perspective, ever since Dhoni burst into the scene, India started chasing a lot more. So now with Virat there as well, so I'm speaking from a very Indian perspective, and that's what I meant. The resources you have, maybe some other countries might not have resources like that, so they prefer maybe batting first. But from an Indian perspective, if you, I don't know what the numbers are, to be honest, but Gaurav will back me on this. Indians do prefer chasing down in limited overs cricket nowadays. I mean, post Dhoni captaincy era.
Since 2010, there's a lot of things that have changed. Back in the day, we were talking about 160, 165 being a really good score. It's almost an insurmountable score most of the time. And today, we're saying that as per the numbers in the last 4 or 5 years, a 180-plus score has only been chased 20% of the time. The question now we should get to is, why is setting 180-plus such a difficult thing to do in T20s?
To be honest, it's not really difficult, but the mindset in which you play the first innings and the mindset you play in the second innings is completely different. And you take 2-3 overs for the opening pair to settle in, read the wicket. And, you know, captains actually send messages to the opening pair to go have a look and then convey what kind of wicket it is, what is the target. A guy like Dhoni knows what the right target is. He knows, he tells his troops, guys, this is not a 200 wicket, let's aim for 160. You don't aim, sometimes you aim for 200 and fall short. So while batting first, maybe that's something which is slightly hard for the opening batsman to do. And the other point of contention which I wanted to bring Deep and Jared in is the factor of due. A lot of captains take due into account, especially in the IPL. I've seen in the toss, in the interviews, they say that there's a lot of due and there could be ball could get wet, my spinners won't come into play, and they choose to chase. But still the numbers have not been drastically different. So due is not such a big factor. I think people give overemphasize due, but I think clearly that's not a factor.
I think in fact, in all these years of the IPL, there's been only one season where a team chasing has won more than 60% of the time, which says that it's still pretty close. But what I come to you, Deep, for is you've been with an IPL franchise. You've been in the dugout for so many years, but 3 years between 2011 and 13. What's the sense from the dugout? Because in a target, you always have an over-by-over approach, how to approach a chase. Yeah. Why is that as hard to do batting first?
See, batting first, first of all, the biggest issue is reading or assessing the pitch. I mean, with test match and 50 overs, you have time to kind of adjust if you've got it wrong. But in T20, you don't. I mean, every over is important. I mean, 2 overs is 10% of the game. So if, like Gaurav mentioned, if you take the first 2 overs just to assess the pitch, 10% of the game is gone. I mean, batting second, you don't have to do that. So you already have a roadmap. The team batting first has kind of showed you how to go about getting to that target. So you have that sorted. Secondly, the kind of the pitchers batting second, predominantly we're talking about night cricket here. Batting second, the pitches get better as well with the temperature falling, the ball skids onto the bat. I completely agree that dew, we talk a lot about dew, but you know, it's a 7 o'clock. I mean, IPL is a 7 p.m. start. I mean, there won't be too much of a difference between 7 and 9 and 10. So that's one of the things. The other important thing is a lot of, there's a lot more depth in batting now, right? I mean, there'll be a handful of bowlers who can't bat anymore. I mean, you've got hitters bat coming. I mean, bowlers who can hit big sixes coming and batting at number 9. So you have all that. And that makes a huge, huge difference. I mean, huge difference. And batting first, from a batting perspective, if I assess it's a 180 pitch, right, and I'm batting in the 7th over, 8th over, and I know I have to go hard at the bowler, and I play a risky shot, that's perceived as a wicket thrown. But the same thing when you're batting second and you're chasing down 180, it's not, because from a people perspective, whatever, I mean, it's like, oh, you know, you're chasing down 180, he had to play that shot. But batting first, because there's no target out there on the scoreboard, so the perception is, oh, he's played a bad shot.
Jared, one of your favorite things to keep bagging on Twitter is the idea of a par score. You keep talking about it, and a lot of times we keep saying that there's 120 balls, you need to hit 126s, there's absolutely no such thing as a par score. Why do you think it's so hard to set a target, Jared?
I think when it comes down to it, cricketers think like cricketers, and at the moment we haven't retrained the psychology to think like T20 players enough. And I've talked to enough cricketers. I chatted to a cricketer yesterday, in fact, about this very thing, and he was saying, how do I retrain myself to not... He was saying he basically got to the middle part of the innings, he's completely in control, and then suddenly he just starts knocking the ball around for singles. And I said, well, that's the point, if you notice it, that you have to stop doing it. That's what happens. We saw a really good a moment of this earlier in the tournament when Virat Kohli I think he scored 30 off 30 balls or 20 off 20 balls, and the team strike rate was actually quite good around him. You could see him going, I don't need to press here. That's not really the way that T20 cricket should be played. And if he was chasing, I don't think he would have been able to do that. He certainly would have been trying to score quicker. So I think that this whole idea of par scores is sort of nonsensical, because A, two different teams on two different surfaces might not even have the same par score. You know, the Brisbane Heat, their par score on a pitch might be 180, whereas the Perth Scorchers' par score might be 150. There's no way of having a normal par score. It's one of those sayings that we brought into cricket, because we just don't know how many runs that you should be scoring realistically, especially until both teams have played against different bowling attacks, etc., etc. So realistically, what you should be doing, I mean, based on all the numbers that Shiva and Gaurav have given me, is you should be going, if I score over 180, I'm going to win a huge percentage of my games. So even if I'm struggling a little bit, I should be trying to score over 180, because very rarely do teams chase. Rather than thinking on this pitch, par is 140, it really is, I think, trying to get as many runs as you can. I think in T20 cricket, you're much better off to occasionally get bowled out for 80 than consistently make 140. And I think a lot of teams take 140.
Just quickly on that, I think apart from playing the game, I think the biggest challenge is actually across all format is reading the pitch. I mean, how many times, I think very rarely somebody gets the pitch right. I mean, across all formats. So the biggest, assessment-wise, the biggest issue is reading the pitch. And that's one of the reasons it's very difficult to set a target.
There's one game which a lot of us keep going back to. Social media's favorite sort of game, World T20 semi-final, India-West Indies. Gaurav, you were sort of on the other side for that game. That innings, India made 192 for 2. Somewhat of total that Jared just spoke about. And Ajinkya Rahane, I think, made, 41 of 35 balls. An innings which seemed okay, because he was kind of pacing the innings for the final onslaught. But eventually, it kind of seemed superfluous, isn't it?
So that's because when you bat first, you go in with the mindset of scoring 180, 185 is our pass score. So these things get hidden, you know. You as a team, you're not looking at 8 wickets have been left. You've not looked at the Hardik Pandya, so who's yet to come into bat. But you look at, oh, we've got 192 guys. We've done a great job. Let's go and defend it. But they maybe they learnt it at the end that it was 20, 30, maybe not 20, 10, 15 runs short. Mm-hmm. The other aspect which we're not talking too much about, we're focusing so much on batsmen. You look at from a bowling point of view. One of the favorite insights which Jared and me keep discussing is the first over of an innings when you bat first. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of teams, it's the economy rate is the lowest. It's about 6.3 and a lot of teams use their
and
fifth
also
bowler.
The seventh over.
Yeah, first and seventh over. And if you see Melbourne Renegades, they always used to bowl Tom Cooper, who was not a great bowler, but not a full-time bowler, part-time bowler, used to bowl the first over. So teams end up using the first over as their sixth bowler can come and bowl the first over. But what happens when you chase? You can't do that every time. When you bowl first, you can do that. But when you're bowling second, you know, you have a target. You might be, oh no, what if I send my part-time bowler there and he gets tonked for 18 runs, 20 runs, my target comes down immediately. So these are all small advantages you have as bowling when you bowl first. So I can definitely play with five bowlers, with the fifth bowler being part-time and squeeze in the first and the seventh over like Deep said. Mm-hmm. Not many people will know that. It just goes as a flash in the pan. So what do you think about that, Jared?
Yeah, I mean, realistically, if you know you're facing someone like Tom Cooper and he's probably going to be opening the over and you're chasing 180, then you're thinking, well, we really need 10 runs off Tom Cooper, aren't you? Whereas when he bowls in the first innings and he's bowling that sort of awkward off-spinning length and he's quite a clever bowler, you probably think, you know, if he bowls a bad ball, we'll hit him for four, but if not, we'll just get through this over and get set a little bit. So certainly the psychology, and it's interesting now that we don't even talk about this as much in Test cricket, but the psychology between a first innings and a second innings is incredibly different. And in T20 cricket it might be the most stark reminder of this, but certainly we've seen it in one day cricket over the years as well. So I think realistically what you're looking for is players who are just really, I mean, this might sound weird, but just really good all the way through the game, because you can't guarantee when you're going to come in. So someone like Tom Cooper is actually quite an important player to have, because he has a lot of different skills. He's a very good player to bowl the first over, but he's also a very good player when it comes to hitting lower down the order. And, you know, realistically, a lot of what we said is nonsense. For instance, I'll tell you something that the Islamabad United told me. So they've got one of the best chasing records in the world. I think they're chasing. They've won 17 and lost 3 in chasing. And they basically said to me, what we try and do is get a really good bowling attack and bat really deep. And that's kind of what you should be doing at any time in T20 cricket. So we're talking a lot about chasing because it's the fad at the moment. But as I said, I just don't think the numbers particularly back it up.
No, it's interesting you talk about the psychology, because just a couple of days ago, and we're still talking about it all over Cricinfo and on social media as well, was the decision Dinesh Karthik made to give it to Vinay Kumar in the 20th over. Jared talks so much about psychology. You had a Kuldeep Yadav, you had a Tom Curran. That decision would not have been talked about half as much had it been made in the first innings. He did give it to Vinay Kumar in the previous game.
But that the other thing is, what do you talk about? Whatever's happened the last, right? Anyway, invariably we forget what's happened in the first innings. We start talking about the second innings straight away. But in that case, in the DK and Vinay Kumar case, I think he got it wrong. I think he got the calculation wrong. And that's where I believe we're still learning. We're still learning in the sense we still know, I mean, most of the IPL team don't know how to use the strategic timeout. I mean, that is a tool which is there. We still look at it more of from a commercial perspective, not from a tactical perspective.
Do you say that because you can use the timeout over a range of overs? It's not fixed.
So the first is between 7 to the 9th, and the second is from the 13th to the 16th. So you can use it to break momentum. You can use it if somebody's going great guns and the coach wants to just butt in and say, hey, listen, you know, maybe you can look at these options. And I won't be surprised in T20 cricket if you start seeing walkie-talkies between, you know, earpieces between the captain and the coach. I mean, why not? I mean, yeah.
Hansi Crony has just woken up from his grave over there.
And, one more point I just wanted to make. So I've been working with teams for now 3-4 years now. And one thing I'm a firm believer of is to, when you provide numbers, when you provide statistics, you divide it into first and second innings in the T20 format. Mm. You don't look at both innings together. It's a completely different ball game. For example, if you look at somebody in the death, and if say if you look at Bumrah in the death, and he has an economy rate of 8.02. But if imagine if that was 12 in the second innings and 4 in the first innings. It's a completely, you're averaging it out and it comes down to 8. So that's a completely, it doesn't give you, the numbers does not tell you a true story, but he might be a purely a first innings bowler. So usually we look at first innings separately and second innings separately, and that's the way I think it will move forward. And most teams will start looking at only first innings separate data separately and second innings data separately, which is where it comes to the point that I want to make, choose my team after the toss is bowled. That is something I would really like to see.
That's,
I don't know,
that's
about
my theory. I don't know what you guys all think about it. With a toss, the team which loses the toss can change the, their team post.
I think
the
both
toss.
Teams can change in terms of, like, if I'm batting second, I'll go with a different team. If I'm batting first, I'll go with a different team. I don't know if we discussed this before.
Because you look at cricket across all formats, toss has become so important. So you need to balance it out. I mean, for me, I mean, there are a lot of theories out there. My theory would be to allow the team losing the toss to change their team.
Post. Jared, I'm just going to pull this conversation, Jared, back to percentages. You mentioned that the percentages are still kind of really close together. It's not separated significantly when it comes to chasing and batting first. One thing that I noticed while digging up IPL data is some teams outperform the others considerably well. For example, the Sunrisers' record is that they won so many games more than they've lost while batting first. They've managed to defend totals. Do you think there are a series of breakout teams that are causing these percentages to come closer with gun bowling attacks?
I think I had a conversation with a bunch of analysts last night at the Wisdom Dinner. We had guys like Freddie Wild and Benedict from Sky all on the table, and we were talking about these sorts of things last night. When you think about it, there's so many different ways that if you look at Mumbai, Nottingham, Perth Scorchers, and you can put Adelaide Strikers in because they've just won the most recent Big Bash, so some of the bigger leagues, none of those teams have a very similar way of playing. Adelaide's way of playing is very different to many other teams. You would say maybe Perth and Sunrisers are a bit similar. But Nottingham is a completely different team again, and Mumbai is a different team again. So realistically, I think for whatever reason, we're starting to condition ourselves to think that there's a bit like in the NBA, we know that everyone has to shoot three-pointers. We haven't really seen teams have similar strategies so far in T20. I mean, Nottingham and Perth Scorchers couldn't be much further from each other when it comes to strategy. And so Sunrisers and Perth are certainly good bowling attacks, but I don't know if we've talked about this on week one or not, but the whole weak link thing of the bowling attack, I think, if you are bowling first, you can have a slightly weaker bowling attack, but if you're bowling second, that's when you need the Perth Scorchers or the Sunrisers kind of bowlers to really back that up. And maybe that's what some of those teams have cottoned on to a little bit earlier, I'm not sure.
Okay, we'll just head into our next section, which is what we did last week with Gaurav and Jared, which is basically a trivia list, and we'll ask them to name as many names as possible on this list. I'm just going to flip this a little bit. We're going to move away from the franchise leagues today. We're going to T20 internationals and the best chasers in T20 internationals. We will not say best chasers in terms of strike rates or anything, but the question I'm posing to you, and this time we'll start with Gaurav. There are 9 guys who've scored a T20 100 in international cricket while chasing. How many of them can you name starting in 3, 2, 1?
Richard Levy, KL Rahul, Evan Lewis, Colin Munro, Glenn Maxwell, Mark Chapman.
10 seconds to go.
Brendan McCullum and somebody from Pakistan, no, Sri Lanka. Yeah, that's about it.
Time. Okay. So you guessed Evan Lewis, KL Rahul, Glenn Maxwell, Richard Levy, Mark Chapman, somebody from Sri Lanka, and Brendan McCullum. Right. Jared, your time starts in 3, 2, 1. Go.
Someone from every international team. Brendan McCullum, Evan Lewis, who did you say, Richard Levi, Glenn Maxwell, Alex Hales, perhaps. I'm trying to think of anyone else. Okay, Raul. Yeah, I'm starting to struggle. I mean, does anyone even watch international? Chris Gayle.
You had seven guesses. One mystery guy from some international team.
But I can tell you this.
Yeah.
All of them opened.
I think, yeah.
I forgot, yeah. David Miller, though.
Looks like it, I think, except one.
I think Miller chased.
Okay, so the answers are, Mark Chapman was a really good guess. It was Babar Hayat.
Thought about him.
You nearly got there. So it's Gayle, Martin Guptill, Alex Hales, Richard Levy, Evan Lewis, Glenn Maxwell, and KL Rahul. So Gaurav evens it out slightly. Is back 2-1 on this, Jared.
Sorry, who?
Gaurav.
He just did a control C.
Gaurav, yeah, yeah. Gaurav won it by just a margin of one.
Yeah, I think we're going to have to go back into the tape. And
no, your McCallum guess was wrong. That was the only difference.
And Baba Head and Mark Chapman, I think.
No, I didn't give that to him. I didn't give that to him, yeah. All right, so Gaurav evens it out slightly. Is back 2-1 on this. Right, we're going to wind up this episode of the podcast following up from our first episode, which was on death bowling. We've spoken so much about chases and how it's become easier, or teams are getting better at chasing down totals, but who are the guys who are best at defending totals? There are a couple of names at the very top, in the IPL at least, which kind of attest to the fact that the team has been successful. Bhuvneshwar Kumar and Ashish Nehra from Sunrisers Hyderabad, Deep. Do you think that's a major factor in their recent success?
Absolutely, yes. Absolutely, yes. I think, again, at least in the IPL, the learning in the last 3-4 years is, you've got to have proper five bowlers. If you see initially 5-6 years of T20 cricket, there was a lot of emphasis on bits and pieces players, somebody who could bowl a bit, bat a bit. But now you're going back to the old theory of, you know, you need proper batsmen and proper bowlers. Yes, couple of all-rounders does always help. But SRH is a fantastic example of, one, you need five proper bowlers and you need wicket-taking bowlers. Rashid is doing it now. Fizz did it a couple of years ago. Obviously, Nehra, Bhuvneshwar, they keep doing it. Even MI, I mean, Jared mentioned MI. I mean, defending. They had Bumrah and Malinga. I mean, look at the bowlers that they have. Obviously, I mean, I know Jared mentioned it before. You've got to have good bowlers if you want to defend. And SRH, I think, is a fantastic example of that.
And I look at it very similar to what Deep said. You have three good bowlers. I've always mentioned that that's 12 overs. And imagine 12 overs going at 6 runs. You're already just scoring just about 72, 80 odd runs. Mm. And then if it's a 180 target, you need to score 100 of remaining 8 overs. So that's how I look at it.
And in terms of numbers, you've got 10 wickets to play 20 overs, right? Yeah. Which is 2 overs per wicket, roughly, I mean, what it is. But in terms of bowling, you've got to bowl 4 overs. 5 bowlers have to bowl 4 overs. That's like 20% of the game. I mean, so that is where more and more teams are emphasizing on making sure they get proper 5 bowlers. And obviously, you have other bowling options. But you can't mess around with 5 proper bowling options.
Jared, I'm just going to come back to you on something that we delved into in some detail last time, which is about Jasprit Bumrah. Last week, Dwayne Bravo tonked him all over the park in a chase that was virtually dead for the Chennai Super Kings. He hit sixes at will. And Bumrah is among our top 10 worst economy rates while defending a total at the death. I mean, and there's this perception of Bumrah being an exceptional death bowler who's had all the tools in the box. And Dwayne Bravo himself is slightly down the list. He goes at over 8.5 and he picks up a wicket more often than most others.
Yeah, the interesting thing about Bumrah is from the numbers that Gaurav sent through to me, Bumrah, when they win, his economy is 6.5. And when they lose, his economy is over 9, I think, 9.4. That's how biases come in, because that means that almost every time he's bowled really well at the death, they've won. And that might also be because of the impact he has. Because, I mean, when he does bowl well at the death, he does just almost lock down an end, doesn't he? And maybe that's why they're winning. But in those other games, he's still going very expensive.
Gaurav, one thing we've spoken about in the past is the importance of the bowler at the other end. Bumrah is naturally a guy who gets wickets, but he's expensive. But with somebody like Malinga at the other end, his early success, a lot of his early success came when there was somebody to contain the run flow. Now he's got Mitchell, McLaren, and they seem to be very similar bowlers now.
So just to correct you there, Bumrah is a guy who has a very high strike rate. In the sense, he does not take wickets, but he controls. Because a lot of batsmen don't tend to attack him. That's what I've seen over the course of the last 2-3 years. If you look to attack him early on, there's a chance that he kind of loses his plot. He is not very sure and his Yorkers don't get executed. So
but he seems to go for runs when they lose.
Yeah.
Like, he goes for runs and they lose.
Yeah, so the thing is to have... So whom should MI pick? And I think they've done a good job with that. They picked now this year Mustafiz, who's a wicket-taking bowler. I think they've also found the plot of whom to bowl with Bumrah. Sometimes bowling partnerships, which we don't talk about much, like Bhuvi bowling at one end, always very consistent in the power play, doesn't give too many runs. They tend to attack the other side. I remember CSK doing it at Ashwin and Muralidharan. One of Ashwin's success was because of that. People used to play out Muralidharan and Ashwin used to get the wickets. So, you know, these things matter a lot, bowling partnerships, whom you bowl with. So, yes, so they have Mitchell McLaren, though he's slowly losing his way out there in T20 cricket, especially with people trying to hit him more often than not. But still, I'm sure MI have that covered. Mm.
Another guy, Deep, we see in the top five of this list, bowling at the death in chases, is Jaydev Unadkal. And we saw that last night when he bowled and defended in a very tight chase. Is what was supposed to be a tight chase, but wasn't. Do you see him continuing in the same mold as he did last year?
Yes, I do. And I also, I mean, that would be an interesting stat. Left-arm seamers, right? Left-arm seamers, they've got to have good numbers because...
2 out of 5 on the list, Nehra and...
Yes, and there is a reason why. Because of the natural angle that they create. I mean, if you look at predominantly, we see, 60-70% right-handers. So their natural swing is towards mid-wicket, which is against the angle of a left-arm seamer. So that's one of the reasons they are so successful in T20 cricket. So if you remember last year, I think it was Delhi against SRH, they actually got in left-handers. Rishabh Pant to bat at number 3 against all the left-arm seamers of SRH. So that becomes easy because then the natural angle is bringing you in and you can actually, that's like becomes part of a left-hander swing. So I'm sure left-hand seamers are more successful, they're economical. You take Fizz, you take Nehra, you take Unadkar, you just name anyone. I mean, in world T20 cricket, you have left-arm seamers.
And they come at a big price in the auction.
because of the numbers. I mean, come on.
One last question to both Jared and Gaurav. Jared, yesterday, I don't know if you watched the game, Delhi had to chase about 71 in 6 overs. And each one of the guys they sent to the top was a hitter. He was not a batsman. And I know you make that distinction all the time. There's Munro, there's Maxwell, then Rishabh Pant, there's Morris. All of them came one after another. Gautam Gambhir was down the order. So the batsmen seem to have reacted when it comes to chases. And the bowlers are bowling all kinds of slow balls. There's absolutely no pace on any ball. What's the next stage of this evolution? How are defending sides going to cope with this?
I think the next stage of the evolution is trying to change the way that batsmen think. How bowlers cope with it, I don't know. Because generally, in cricket, batsmen get on top and then bowlers find a way to bring them back. So I'm not 100% sure how that's going to work. But yeah, I think the next stage of evolution is basically training batsmen to understand that 20 off 10 balls is, quite often much more important than 40 off 30 balls. And that every ball in T20 cricket is a finite resource that you should do your most with. And I think that is where batting will go in T20. The bowlers will just try and find ways to hold on. And that's generally what bowlers do. They're never going to be, they're always going to be the defenders in T20 cricket rather than the attackers that they are in Test cricket. But realistically, I'd be shocked if suddenly, we shaved a run off the, off T20 totals worldwide. I think what's more likely to happen is it just to go up a little bit slower. But certainly over the last few years, we've seen a lot more runs scored than we saw before.
And one thing, I just want to make a point about the Delhi Ara game, which I found very interesting, was the field placement. There was one delivery to Morris where they had a short third man, they had a point, and they had a guy at third man between these two. So Morris, so two boundaries went there, and you bowl wide outside off stump. There's no place where he needs to find a gap. He has to figure out some way to do it. So maybe innovative field placements could be one thing which defending teams can start using.
And a couple of times he was forced to take a single. He's a six hitter and
Like yesterday, that was a very good example. If you're going to bowl wide Yorkers that wide, you don't need a fielder on the onside behind square. So you straight away, I mean, somebody can hit it from there to square leg or behind square leg. God, he's got to be a genius. I mean, I guess I don't see anyone apart from AB de Villiers doing that. Field placement and all, that's going to change. That definitely will change. Bowlers will obviously kind of, as of now, obviously, as Jared mentioned, the batsman's on the top because obviously you set a field. And as a batsman, I know what kind of ball he's going to deliver. Is it going to be a Yorker or a slower? I'm ready for it. But I think more and more you'll see more strategies getting into the field placement and what kind of balls. Maybe there'll be new ball, different kind of new slowers coming up and all that jazz.
Yeah. Right. We've got a whole laundry list then for teams defending totals. Innovative field placements, teams after the toss, mic'd up captains. We've got a whole laundry list then. That's a wrap for the second episode of Talking T20. Thank you very much, Deep Dasgupta and Gaurav Sundaraman, for joining us. And Jared Kimber for joining us all the way from London, just a few hours after the Wisden dinner. Thanks, Jared.
Not a problem. And I will keep my Bumrah stats for another
time. Thank you. You can find us on ESPN Cricket Info very soon, and hopefully very soon on iTunes and other podcasting platforms where you listen to. That was Talking T20. Thank you very much for listening.
This is ESPN Cricket Info.